Welcome back to the program. When our founders set up a federal system, one of the goals, even then, was to allow the states to be living laboratories of policy, to find out what works and what doesn't, and then use that in shaping our national policy. As we look out at the landscape of the problems we face today, globalization, the impact of technology, the need to improve education and infrastructure, all those problems seem to happen first in the state of Michigan. While there were some who wanted to see Michigan and Detroit go into bankruptcy rather than get a bailout for the auto industry, Michigan and Detroit persevered, in some measure, through the efforts of its two-term governor, Jennifer Granholm. Today, Detroit is experiencing a kind of renaissance that even goes beyond the Tigers and the Lions. Detroit today is becoming a city of what Richard Florida calls the creative class. Even a Whole Foods is opening in downtown Detroit. How did this happen? And what can we learn from the experience as we deal with decaying cities and bankrupt states throughout the nation? We're going to talk about that today with Michigan's former governor, Jennifer Granholm. She was elected governor of Michigan in 2002 and reelected in 2006. She's a graduate of University of California at Berkeley, where she now teaches law and public policy, as well as Harvard Law School. It is my pleasure to welcome Governor Jennifer Granholm here today to talk about her book, A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future. Governor Granholm, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, what a treat to be on. Thanks so much.
It's great to have you here. When we look back at Michigan and Detroit specifically, we see a state and a city that not too long ago was about as far down as you can get a basket case, and yet it turned around and it's taught us lessons that that we need to learn. Talk a little bit about what you found at the beginning of being governor.
Well, it's interesting you ask that, Jeff, because there's so many parallels with what's happening now in the national economy, and it's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, which is called A Governor's Story, because I think that in this laboratory of democracy that there are lessons for the nation. When I first was elected, Michigan was just poised in the valley, thinking that we would emerge from the 2001-2002 recession in the same way we had emerged from other national recessions in the past. When the nation is in a recession, people don't buy cars, and that's our bread and butter in Michigan. And so when things come back, they start to buy them again. But in 2001-2002, while the nation started to recover, Michigan did not. And so we were scratching our head as to what was going on underneath the structure of our economy that was causing us not to rebound like we had in the past. What we learned is that this was not a cycle, that this was a structural change to the foundation of Michigan's economy, with the loss of traditional manufacturing jobs and other sectors because of the really robust trade that began with the adoption of the trade agreements, et cetera, and the movement of capital and jobs overseas. We just happen to have more of those kind of jobs than any other state in the country, particularly related to the auto industry, so we were hit harder and first. And that's why, honestly, this nation is scratching its head over how you create jobs. Why is this so-called recovery? We're not even sure if it's a recovery, but why is joblessness persistent? I mean, California, you know this. What is going on underneath the structure of it? And honestly, it is because the globalization has broadened the playing field so greatly. The loss of the kind of jobs that created a middle class have gone, and they are not coming back. So the question for us is, how do we deal with that?
You talk about that when you first came to office, that you tried to deal with a lot of these problems in the more traditional ways. You cut government, you cut taxes, you did all the things that we hear about in political rhetoric today. None of them worked.
Well, and it's very interesting. Absolutely. In my first term, I cut taxes 99 times. By the time I left office, Michigan's size, the footprint of government, was 48th in the country relative to population. By far, I cut more out of government than any state in the country. Much of that was because of the contraction in our economy. I had to do that because we had to balance our budget. But it's also a lesson in those who are saying that the solution to our nation's problems is just to reduce the size of government, cut spending, and that will alone, and cut taxes, that will alone cause a renaissance to occur. It did not in Michigan. Our corporate tax rate, and because of all the tax cuts that I inherited and that I adopted, that rolled in during my time, our corporate tax rate dropped more than any other states in the country between 1997 and 2007. So you would think that if those were the solutions that worked, that Michigan would have the number one economy in the nation, the most robust, the lowest unemployment rate. But in fact, we still had the highest unemployment rate for much of the last decade. The only thing that began to turn us around, Jeff, and we still have a long way to go in Michigan. I wouldn't want to ring the bell and say we've arrived at the promised land. But the thing that really started to have impact was when we could partner with the federal government to invest in strategic sectors. Yes, the federal government came in to save the auto industry, but by the time that happened, we had lost a huge, vast number of automotive jobs already. So that was an important sort of defensive move. But playing offense on the economy by allowing us to diversify into sectors where we knew we could be globally competitive. We don't have the tools as states to be able to compete against China or other countries that are actively intervening, but partnering with the federal government and the private sector allows us to do that. One quick example, in Michigan we identified making the battery for the electric vehicle as something that would be natural for us to compete in. So when the federal government, through the Recovery Act, offered the opportunity for America to build the electric vehicle battery, the lithium-ion battery in this country, I went to our state legislature. I said, let's put some incentives on the table. Let's partner with private sector companies that we know can do this. And as a result, in just 18 months' time, we were able to attract 18 companies to Michigan to build that electric vehicle battery. And those companies are projected to create 63,000 jobs.
We hear a lot about cutting, but much of what you talk about is really taking a more surgical approach to where those cuts are going to happen and where investments are going to be made, particularly within this context of public-private partnership. Talk about those partnerships and why they're important.
Well, no, the global economy is such a massive competitive field that other countries are aggressively partnering with private sector companies to lure them. It's not just about labor. People think it's all about labor. Labor is an element, but honestly, in the advanced manufacturing world, in a vehicle, for example, labor is only 7% of the cost of a vehicle. What it's really about is linking arms with the government to provide access to capital, a market, introduction to customers. There's a whole spate of issues that a government can link arms with the private sector to provide to make them competitive in a global economy. We did that in Michigan on this battery sector, for example, in partnership with the federal government. But truly, without that partnership with the federal government, we would never have been able to have the resources to do it. And right now, all of these states are just, we're competing against one another. Like, I would come to California as the governor of Michigan. I'd go to Silicon Valley, and I'd say to those great idea producers and researchers and developers, I'd say, if you've got a great product and you want to take it to scale, come to Michigan. Why in California aren't all of those ideas actually starting to be taken to scale, at least here? Why aren't we producing the products here? Because there isn't a strategy to do that, and there's not a partnership with the federal government to make that happen. Now, this is a surgical approach. You've identified that. You cannot have the government partner with the private sector on every type of job. But if there are jobs that are critical to the nation, if there are industries and sectors that are important for our country, for example, energy, if we want to be energy independent as a country and it's an important national need, then we need the federal government to step up and help to create those industries in this country. Same thing with manufacturing. If we want to have a strong manufacturing sector in this country, because it's important for our national defense, for example, we have to create the means to build things, that will secure our nation, then we have to have a backbone here to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to intervene on making, refrigerators or stuff like that, but on critical areas, absolutely. And every state needs to do an assessment of what it can be globally competitive in and then provide a partnership for those sectors to be able to be successful.
Isn't it also about attracting the right people and creating critical mass of the right population to do these things for the various states?
Yes.
Kind of demographic that the state has, the kind of workers that a state has for the kind of jobs that might be attracted and might be available.
Right. And to pick up on something that you asked in the last question, you have to have a streamlined government. You might have to cut what's important in order to fund what's essential. And the things that are essential are education. Because if we do not, as a nation and certainly as the various states, forget that we have dropped globally in the standings of states and the rankings of science scores, math scores, reading scores, and aggressively take on that to create the most well-educated, because that's how we will compete. We'll compete on quality. And so in California, you've got all of these fabulous assets, but you have a very challenged public education system. And if you want to be able to attract those job providers for middle-class jobs, you have to have the skilled workers to be able to do that. And you can't do it if you are slashing teachers and having large class sizes and slashing days, and you're not focused on getting kids to jump over a higher bar. We have not, you know, as a nation, we started this movement toward increasing standards and getting every child to take a college prep curriculum. Very important. But we've got to be able to provide the resources to get those kids to jump over that higher bar. And that's not what's happening.
The other aspect is looking at even the manufacturing sector in a different way, because as you talk about, a lot of those low-level manufacturing jobs are not coming back. They've been offshored. They're not going anywhere. But there's a whole second tier of high-level manufacturing that there is an opportunity for us to capture.
Absolutely. Advanced manufacturing, and people don't realize that, you know, when you drive a car, for example, you are driving the most technologically advanced mass-produced product in the world. There is more technology, for sure, by far, in the advanced autos, in the current-day autos, than by far there is in the most sophisticated computer system you have in your home. So we need to focus on the kinds of advanced manufacturing products and sectors that require the level of skill that we know we can provide. So if you walked into a factory today, an advanced manufacturing factory, you would see that most people, you need to have people who've got a technical or a vocational certification or a higher degree. You have to have people who know how to program the robots, who know how to maintain a robotic line. That level of quality and of skill and of training is something the U.S. can excel at if we make the right investments. But other countries are gunning for those jobs. We haven't lost those yet, but we will unless we get in the game and provide the means for those advanced manufacturing firms as well to stay and come and be competitive here.
I want to come back around to something you touched on before, because when people talk about a national economic strategy, there's often a negative connotation to that in a lot of places. But what you talk about is that states are already competing, that states already are engaged in their own form of economic policy.
Right. And in fact, what I'm talking about really is a bottom-up strategy, not a top-down. I think the federal government has to be a partner with the states in providing the resources necessary for them to fulfill their economic strategies so that they can compete globally and not just against one state or another. So, I mean, I proposed in the book that we just wrote a jobs race to the top, where, you know, we had this great, you know, education race to the top, where a little bit of money caused these states to bend over backwards to raise their standards and do things that they would never have otherwise gotten the political will to do. But in this time where states are so cash hungry, if the federal government put out just the same level, it was just a $4 billion commitment to do race to the top, you would see all of these states streamlining permitting. They would collapse the bureaucracy. They would cluster development to provide a supply chain of particular like industries that suit that state. I mean, for example, in Michigan, we're not going to be a state that is going to build a cluster around coal mining, because we don't have those resources. But you better believe in Virginia or in other states, they might want to do something with clean coal technology. So every state has something to offer that gives them a unique competitive ability. And if the federal government were to incent a strategy at the local level to be able to enhance their current strengths, I think it would be tremendous. It's a bottom-up strategy.
Talk about the relationship between labor and management, because those partnerships are essential. In many ways, the failure of those partnerships led to many of the problems in the auto industry and in manufacturing. Those have to be renewed in a very different way.
Right. A new paradigm has to be all the way through. And I think here is where, for example, the United Auto Workers is a great model to follow. They have a new leader named Bob King. But when he first was elected 2 years ago, he stood before the auto industry, the suppliers and the automakers, management essentially, and said, "This is not your father's UAW. We understand that we have to be globally competitive, and we want to create jobs in America. So this is no longer labor versus management. This is labor and management working together to be globally competitive in order that we can keep jobs and create jobs in the United States. That mindset is absolutely critical. In fact, if you walked into a UAW factory, they just adopted these new agreements, which are completely cooperative, teamwork-based. There's a factory in Michigan called the Global Engine Manufacturing Alliance, and you walk in, and their motto is, anyone can do any job, anywhere, anytime. In these new factories, you can't tell the difference between management and labor. They are all working in teams. It's all very flexible manufacturing. So that kind of skill level, cooperation, and a competitive drive to compete against the globe rather than fight management is exactly what the new, I think, labor agreements have to emulate. And by the way, I would just say that the UAW, which offered a tiered wage and benefit structure for the new people that were hired, they represented in Michigan the public sector workers as well. And the private sector UAW members sort of led the way and enabled me to negotiate with our public sector workers a similar kind of tiered system so that we could offload some of the pension, the legacy costs, the health care costs, and the newer members are under a different structure.
And those health care costs are really a big part of the problem. Again, it's impossible to look at the big picture and all of this without including those legacy and health care costs.
It is, and it's one of the reasons why, as a country, again, it is important to have health care reform, because in the United States, we pay twice as much for health care, and we cover half the people, but what we pay is offloaded onto the private sector. So we're competing with countries that are bearing that burden for their industry, and we are not, or we have not been. Obviously, with the Health Care Reform Act, that took a step in the right direction. But I can tell you, just as a quick example, in Michigan, we were competing with Ontario, which is right across the border from Michigan. They manufacture a lot of cars. For the first time a couple of years ago, more cars were being manufactured in Ontario than in Michigan. Why? It wasn't because of taxes. It wasn't because of regulation. It was because Canada provides a partnership with business on health care. The private sector doesn't bear the whole burden.
What is it that is now generating some of the turnaround that we're seeing in Detroit? And there have been glowing articles in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and various other places about this renaissance that's starting to happen there.
Yeah, the reason why is because there has been strategic, active partnership with government, where government is providing a hand, and not a heavy top-down, but a hand to make sure that they can achieve the job creation opportunities that we have been looking for. In fact, in 2010, Michigan's unemployment rate dropped 6 times faster than the national average. The Gallup organization said that Michigan's job improvement was the best of all of the nation. In August, Newsweek declared that Michigan was the number one place for jobs. Now, we still have a high unemployment rate. We had a long way to go. Our unemployment rate had been 14.5%, and it's down to in the 10% range. But the bottom line is things are improving, and we were on the right track. But we would not, again, have been able to do that without the ability to diversify into strategic sectors that we knew we could be competitive in. Can I just make one more point,
sure,
Jeff, which I think gets to this issue that you're hearing about today in the presidential race and what the solutions are? And there's a lot of talk about cutting taxes as a way of America competing. And I do think it's important to have a corporate tax rate that is competitive, that's not an outlier. And right now ours is a bit of an outlier. But for anybody who thinks that just lowering taxes is going to cause this rebound in America's economy, think about this. The multinational corporations that would get the benefit of that lower tax rate in the United States have an obligation to their shareholders, and their obligation is to invest to maximize their return. The way they can best maximize their return is to invest that additional money that they might get from a corporate tax cut in a developing country, in a country where they can have the benefit of a new market. So if you don't tie tax policy to job creation in the United States, you might actually be facilitating the flight of jobs. The same thing is true with the capital gains tax rate. You know, the capital gains tax rate went from 28% under Bill Clinton to it ended up now 15%. And during that whole time, that dropped because George Bush cut the corporate tax rate, the capital gains tax rate as well. Our economy still continued to slide. The nation's economy, the loss of jobs still continued. So that investment that everybody assumed would happen because they had extra income was happening, but it was happening in a global marketplace. And those companies that were being invested in were investing globally, but not in the United States. So my whole point in this is that if you just have tax cuts and cutting government as your only strategy, those strategies are not working in the 21st century global economy.
And the other side of that coin is realizing that these changes are in fact happening. And as you talk about, not worrying and lamenting so much about the jobs that are going away, but engaging in an effort to encourage insourcing.
Absolutely. And in fact, this is what the smartest countries do. I was moderating a panel of CEOs recently, CEOs of multinational corporations like Coca-Cola, John Deere, AT&T, and I said, you guys are in all these countries. Which country does it best? Which country is the best place for you guys to go to? And they all said Singapore. And I said, well, what is Singapore doing that we should be doing as well in America? And they said, here's what they're doing. They have foreign direct investment goals, meaning they have done an assessment of their economy, they identify their strengths, and then they go out globally and attract the companies that will meet those strengths. They create clusters of industries, but they go out and get them. And that's what our country should be doing. We should have a goal of going to get international companies who could locate here. Instead of seeing our companies go and invest elsewhere, we should be going somewhere else, you know, to other countries and saying, if you want to do business in the United States, come. We will make it easy for you. We'll make it a seamless experience. So, yeah, getting our ambassadors to all of these other countries to have specific goals about getting industries from Italy, from Spain, from China, you know, you name it, to invest in the United States, that would be a very important step because people want to come to America. Let's just make it easy for them.
Governor Jennifer Granholm, her book is A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future. Governor, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for the intelligent questions. Really, really great discussion.
Thank you.